I am Lucas.
And I am Jonathan.
Welcome back to Streamlined. We are back, and this fall season hasn't been too eventful when it comes to tech news, but over the past few weeks, there's been a lot of interesting news that applies to a lot of people, and we've got a broad range of topics to talk about today. So, Jonathan, what are we covering?
Thank you, Lucas. Today we have four topics to talk about. First up, we'll talk about Intel's 12th gen Adler Lake chips, which are finally out despite the 11th gen ones just coming out a few months ago. Next up, DJI has finally updated their professional line of Mavic drones with the Mavic 3 and Mavic 3 Cine, which I gotta say are pretty amazing. Next up, we got the Surface Laptop SE from Microsoft, which is going to directly compete with top-selling Chromebooks on the market. And finally, we gotta talk about Meta, which is the new name of the company behind Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, and more that we'll talk about later.
Thank you, Jonathan. We have a lot of things to talk about today, so let's get into it after a message from our sponsor. Welcome back. Today, our first topic for today is Intel just announced their 12th gen Alder Lake CPUs, which I found very surprising to hear, especially since 11th gen desktop CPUs just came out, I want to say in like April or May, so like very recently. But these new chips are really good, the 12th gen. If you held out on buying a 11th gen to waiting for the 12th gen, the 12th gen are really good chips because they're basically kind of taking some notes from kind of what Apple and a lot of people who make ARM chips do. They have now efficiency and performance cores, which is really cool. Basically, now going to be, like I said, performance cores and efficiency cores. And basically, it's almost like half and half, I want to say. It definitely depends on your CPU. But when it comes to the flagship i9-12900K, there's 8 performance cores and 8 efficiency cores, which are pretty cool. So basically, the efficiency cores are for basically background tasks. They're optimized for handling highly threaded workflows and also minimize interruptions from background task management. The performance cores are pretty much for what's in the foreground, what you're doing at the moment. They're optimized for handling a single task and lightly threaded performance, and also enhance gaming and productivity workload. So it's kind of cool, these new chips, how basically it can now allocate certain tasks, such as like just things that go on in the background. Like if you go to task manager on your computer, you could see background tasks, and I'm just pulling that up now. There's basically 215 background tasks going on right now, and some of those are 1Password, iCloud photo sharing, just stuff for like my motherboard, like NZXT cam, like all that stuff is background tasks. And with the 12th gen chips, these kind of tasks will be assigned to the efficiency cores of processor. And then there's also foreground tasks. So now, like, I have Audacity open, I have Photoshop, I have Brave open, and I also have the task manager open. And these kind of applications would be allocated to the performance cores if I had a 12th gen processor. So it seems really cool how they're basically allocating different tasks to different sectors of the chip. And you'd think this means that they use a lot less power, which is kind of interesting because they don't. They use a lot of power. And basically, looking at the Intel spec sheets, the i9-12900K uses basically all the way up to 241 watts of power. And all 12th gen chips have a base clock power of 125 watts. That's like more than the max of like the 11th gen chips would. So these chips are very power hungry. The i5-12600K goes up to 150 watts of power, and the i7-12700K goes up to 190. But that 12900K uses so much power to basically feed its 16 cores. And when it comes to the 12700K and the 12600K, the 700K has 12 cores, 8 performance, and 4 efficiency. And the i5-12600K has 10 cores, 6 performance, and 4 efficiency. It's an interesting take what Intel is doing. And these are finally going to be chips that can easily destroy AMD's 5th gen Ryzen processors, which have been kind of ahead of the competition, especially for like gaming recently. I don't know. I think this new kind of architecture they're doing, like I said, they're kind of taking a page out of like Apple's book when it comes to like especially M1 Max and M1 Pro just came out a few weeks ago. And those chips kind of directly compete to these new 12th gen processors. I know the i9-12900K has pretty much the exact same performance as an M1 Pro chip with its full 10 CPU cores, which is really cool. And With that said, you aren't seeing two threads per core like we usually do. There's 16 cores on the 12900K and 24 threads. So I don't totally understand how calculating how many threads you need, but that's pretty cool. And again, I keep coming back to their power draw because it's kind of interesting to see how their power draw is so high. But for now, they're finally a 7-nanometer lithography called Intel 7 to manufacture these chips. And I mean, Intel's been using 14-nanometer lithography for a very long time. It's great that they're finally changing that. But yeah, I just find it really interesting to see how the numbers just are kind of interesting how they match up. So Jonathan, do you want to talk to us more about the Intel 12th gen Alder Lake CPUs?
Sure. So yeah, I feel like overall, the 12th gen chips are like really, really cool. So like, it's like really good performance. And then, yeah, like it's just all around like really cool. Like I just said, the performance is like insane. Like it's so cool. And then like there's a max turbo frequency of like 5.2 if you're getting the i9-12900K and i9-12900KF, which is what I'll be kind of basing this off of, which is like really good. It has a 3.2 like base frequency on the P core, so 3.2 gigahertz. E core base frequency is 2.4 gigahertz. And yeah, like I don't really want to talk about this too much, Lucas, because I know that you're going to get into it, but like the DDR5 RAM is really cool. Like it's so fast. It supports like really good graphics, like for like dynamic frequencies and stuff. And yeah, overall it's just like a crazy good chip. It has like a ton of like Intel's like built-in things, because I feel like Intel has kind of got to go along with what Apple's kind of been doing. Like they need to start competing with that even more. So I feel like that is one of the reasons for like the rushed 12th gen chip, because they need to compete with Apple's new silicon chips, because Apple used to use Intel's chips, but now they don't. So like Intel now needs to like kind of be like, yeah, guys, you can still trust us to do like good quality chips. Like you have to kind of earn that back from other laptop manufacturers and just like general like people who are just going to buy an Intel chip for like a desktop or include it in a desktop. So I feel like overall, it's just like, it's kind of weird how fast chips have been like produced and stuff, like back to back, but I guess it makes sense when you think about it. And yeah, it's just all around a really cool chip. Now, Lucas, do you want to talk more about like DDR5 RAM?
Yeah, sure. And I just kind of want to like say a correction to what I said before, when I was comparing M1 Pro and Max to the 12th gen chips. And in terms of Geekbench, actually, the 12900K gets around to 15,500 in the multi-core on Geekbench, and some of the highest single core I've ever seen. It's looking really close to 2000, which I think that's the highest single core performance of really any chip. And M1 Pro and Max get around 12,500. So already the 12900K is a lot faster than it, and especially when it comes to single core, because it has those allocated performance cores. And the 12700K is pretty much on par with M1 Pro and Max, has about a 13,000 multi-core, and again has a really powerful single core of around 2000. And then the i5-12600K is also a really good chip. It has about a 9500 for multi-core, which like that's just incredible. And also, you're still seeing really amazing single core performance. So, I mean, yeah, these chips are definitely not to like joke around. But what's also cool is that these chips support DDR5 RAM and PCI Express Gen 5, which are both new, which is really cool. So, for example, DDR5 is much faster than DDR4. So, and to like be more precise, the exact speed that it's faster is DDR5 is now 4,800 megatransfers per second, and DDR4 was only 3,200. So we're looking at like a 50% increase, which is really crazy. And PCI Express Gen 5.0 has up to 16 lanes. That's four times the amount of PCI Gen 4, which only has four lanes. Like that's incredible. It also is now able to support Wi-Fi 6E. It also has 8 DMI 4.0 lanes, and it also can now better handle memory overclocking, which is pretty cool. And I mean, yeah, like it's supporting next gen things. And DDR5 RAM is out. A lot of people who are making chipset motherboards that are compatible with these are still making them compatible with DDR4, especially since DDR5 is so new and it's kind of hard to produce, especially given the chip shortage. But yeah, it's kind of, it's pretty cool. We're already like up to this. How like Intel's actually taking advantage of these, all these new technologies that like AMD hasn't taken advantage of. And it, yeah, it does support PCI Express Gen 5. You can't buy anything with PCI Express Gen 5 yet. Some motherboards aren't even compatible with it yet, even the Z690 ones. But we should expect some PCI Express Gen 5 like SSDs soon. That would be pretty cool. But then when it comes to motherboards, the physical size of these 12th gen chips are like much larger. It's using a new LGA 1700 socket, and you're going to need a Z690 chipset motherboard. You can't use a Z490, 590. You need the new motherboard. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. I think these are all really cool, like more making everything more future proof. Because I mean, I'm sure the 13th and like 14th gen processors will also have the same kind of socket. So let's say you get a 12th gen processor now and want to upgrade in like 2 or 3 years, that's probably a pretty good possibility. And you won't need to like buy new RAM because DDR5 will most likely be the highest supported. And I didn't say this, but you can now get up to 4800 megahertz RAM with these new chips, which is just crazy. Like, and that's because of the PCI Express Gen 5 support. So I mean, yeah, that's pretty, I think this is all really cool. And there's basically 6 processors that they announced. What they're selling now is the i9-12900K, the i9-12900KF, the i7-12700KF, i5-12600K, and i5-12600KF. And all the KF versions are basically, they're the same as the K versions. They just don't have a integrated GPU. So keep that in mind. People sometimes buy the cheaper processor just because it's the same performance, but cheaper. But especially since graphics cards are so hard to get now, do not buy a KF version of a chip without a graphics card. Your computer will not post just because there is no integrated graphics. But I mean, yeah, I really want to see, and what Intel's done really makes me want to see what AMD's going to do. Because I mean, AMD's, let's take the Ryzen 9 5950X, which is their most flagship CPU, it's basically like $200 more than the i9-12900K. And the i9-12900K is a lot more fat, like it's a lot better. So I think that's a pretty cool how Intel is really, like, these 12th gen chips are what I feel like everybody was like after they saw how good the M1 chip was compared to previous like Intel chips in Macs. So before we move on, Jonathan, do you have any final thoughts on the Intel Alder Lake chips?
Honestly, not really, Lucas. Like, I feel like overall, like, these chips are really cool. And yeah, I feel like that's kind of the end of it. I feel like there aren't too many like flashy new features. There's just like big hardware advancements, which is something that honestly I like to see. Like, I like to see when like its main focus is on, especially for something like chips or something like this within a computer, like a component. I like it when main focus is just improving upon the hardware in like big ways, not in like tiny little ways. But yeah, I feel like overall it's just a really good upgrade, and that's about it. Like, if you are in the market for getting computer chip, I guess, like, yeah, I would recommend getting the new ones if you can spare the money. Because you'll be able to get DDR5 RAM support and like a whole bunch of other things. And assuming that you don't have a motherboard yet, if you are like building yourself a computer, then yeah, sure, go ahead for it. But I don't feel like it's worth like getting a whole new motherboard and buying a whole new, if you already have like a pretty decent computer chip. Like, I feel like it has a ton going for it, yeah, but I feel like it just doesn't have enough for it to be like a really worthwhile purchase that you can make. So yeah, I feel like those are my final thoughts. So back to you, Lucas, if you have anything else.
Yeah, I just I just realized we forgot to mention the pricing of these chips. The i5 starts at $299, i7 is $449, and the i9 is $599, and that is given you're able to get these, especially with the chip shortage. I'm sure you won't be paying that exact price if you try to get your hands on it as soon as possible. But yeah, that's the MSRP of these chips. So with that said, we're kind of going to completely switch gears and start talking about DJI and their Mavic 3 drone. And I mean, they haven't came out with the flagship Mavic since 2018 with the Mavic 2. But basically, they announced the DJI Mavic 3 and Mavic 3 Cine, and they're incredible. So Jonathan, do you want to start us off?
Sure, Lucas. So yeah, like you said, DJI released a new Mavic 3 and Mavic 3 Cine, which are honestly like really cool drones. So they support like Apple ProRes, at least I know in the Cine it does. I don't know if it supports in just regular Mavic 3 as well, but we keep on saying Cine, so you're probably wondering what that actually means. And it's just short for cinematography. Like I feel like it's kind of weird how they're calling it a Cine. It's kind of like a weird shortening, but yeah. It's short for cinematography. It's just like a more camera-based, has a Hasselblad camera, and it's just meant for aerial photography and nothing else. Like, the Mavic 3 is kind of like a good drone that's kind of like good at a lot of things. Like, it's great just like for fun, I guess. It's great for like doing whatever you want with a drone because it has like a pretty good camera. It has like good battery life and like a lot of stuff that are just going for it. So overall, I feel like it's a really good drone, like all around. It's really balanced. And yeah. And then the Mavic 3 Cine is, let's say you want to take more pictures, you want to capture video, that kind of thing, then that's what I'd recommend. Like it's like just made for cinematography and stuff. So like I said earlier, it supports ProRes 422 HQ video. It has a 1 terabyte SSD, which sadly is not user replaceable, so you can't get like multiple. And all the other like specs and everything are the same as like the Mavic 3, between like the Mavic 3 Cine and standard Mavic 3. So it's basically just like improvements to the camera is all the Mavic 3, like, there's like really good camera on it. So it can shoot 5.1K video at up to 50 FPS, 4K video up to 120 FPS, or 1080p up to 200 FPS. So it's 46 minutes of flight time and uses DJI's like OcuSync 3 Plus. So that gives it a good 15 kilometers of range. So overall, I feel like 46 minute battery life is pretty good for a drone. Like, I feel like when you first hear it, it sounds like awful. It sounds like 46 minutes of like battery life. I get like 18 hours of battery life on my phone. But you have to keep in mind that like that battery is supporting all four like rotors and everything. And it's like 46 minutes is a long time in terms of like a drone just to be like flying in the sky. Like, typically, I feel like if you are to fly a drone, it's typically not really longer than for like 20 minutes. So I feel like as having like a really big battery is like something that's really cool because it means that you don't have to be as worried about like battery life and stuff as much. But at the same time, like, I feel like I don't really know any like actual places where I would use all 46 minutes of my battery life on this drone. Because, like, I get it if you're shooting something, but typically you can get that done in, like, 20, 30, I guess, 40 minutes. But I feel like 45, it feels pretty long, which is a good thing for the battery. So, yeah, overall, it's, like, it's really good camera. They shoot 20 megapixel photos, but this time it's in a 4:3 aspect ratio. So the last drone was in 3:2, like the Mavic 2 Pro. So yeah, Lucas, do you want to talk more about it?
Sure. I gotta say, these drones they're really cool. And the Mavic 3 is what I feel like the prosumer would get. Like, let's say you're like just getting into like even like a Mavic Air 2 and like Air 2S, I think we've talked about those on the podcast. Like those are still incredible drones too, but I feel like if you're a really prosumer, which is like a professional consumer, I feel like the Mavic 3 would be great for you. And if you're like a professional, Mavic 3 Cine is probably like even better, especially since it has a 1 terabyte SSD built in, shoots Apple ProRes 422HQ, and also comes with that, I think it's called the DJI Pro controller, Pro RC controller, something like that. And it comes with that controller, which, I mean, the controller, it costs $1,200, just the controller, and it basically just has a built-in screen that's super bright. I don't think it's worth that much money, but I do think possibly the like ProRes and 1 terabyte SSD, those are, I think, are worth it if you're like a cinematographer, especially since ProRes takes up so much storage. Like shooting ProRes on an iPhone, because Apple brought ProRes 422HQ video supporting in the camera app, and 1 terabyte, I've seen people getting like maybe 50 minutes of actual being able to shoot with that. So that built-in SSD is great. I don't know if you could actually put an additional like micro SD card, because you can put up to 1 terabyte micro SD card in the Mavic 3. But besides that, I think that's pretty cool. And I mean, the ProRes, like you could shoot ProRes on a Mavic 3. It just, that's like a software thing, but I guess they want to keep it exclusive to the Mavic 3 Cine, which I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just an amazing, they're both amazing drones. And I feel like when I'm going to be talking about like the specs of the Mavic 3, like they're the same pretty much, except just those three features. So just keep that in mind. Basically, they could shoot up to 5.1K video at 50 FPS. I don't know why they wouldn't go to 60 FPS and just shoot like 5K video, but it's 5.1K video at 50 frames per second. 4K video up to 120 FPS, which is really cool. 1080p up to 200 FPS. And like John said, has 46 minutes of flight time with OcuSync 3 Plus, which has 15 kilometers of range, which I believe is the highest range of any DJI drone. And yeah, like you also said, it has a 46 minute flight time, which I feel like people like say drones could fly for like so little time. And keep this in mind, the Mavic 2 would fly for 31 minutes. And I mean, that's a full 15 extra minutes. And it's kind of like a good relief, especially if you're coming from a Mavic 2, you're probably used to shooting a bunch of things and then having it come back with like maybe 20 or 30% left of battery. But now you have, when you're like going to fly it back on a Mavic 2, if you upgrade to a Mavic 3, you're probably going to have like 50 or 60% more battery just because of how much more battery the Mavic 3 has. Especially if you get like the Fly More combo, you get three batteries and each have 46 minutes. So you could easily have like a little under 2.5 hours of flight time with all the batteries and with this drone, which like a cinematographer's dream, instead of having to lug around a ton of batteries. I mean, yeah, I think this is a really cool drone. We haven't really talked about the actual cameras, however, like the specs of the cameras, but there's two, and basically there's a Hasselblad camera. This is the main camera. It's a 4/3 inch CMOS sensor. It's a 20 megapixel camera with an 84 degree field of view. It has an adjustable aperture from f2.8 all the way to f11. And yeah, that's basically the main camera. That's what it's going to be using most of the time. But it also has a telephoto camera, which is a 1/2 inch CMOS sensor. This is not a Hasselblad camera. It has a 15 degree field of view. And this is basically for zooming in. So this is a 7x optical zoom. And the drone, all the way up to 28x zoom. And basically, when you actually zoom in on that much, it's going to be using the 7x camera and then digitally zooming in 4x. And it could shoot, like John said, 4:3 aspect ratio. So the max amount of pixels this 1/2 inch sensor could get is 4,000 by 3,000. So it's really just punching in when you're using that digital zoom. So you will lose a lot of quality, but it's still a very good camera. And being able to zoom in that much is pretty cool. Like I would have liked to see like the Mavic 2 had a Mavic 2 Pro and a Mavic 2 Zoom. I know the Zoom had a pretty good optical zoom. Like, I wish they would have added like a Mavic 3 Zoom option to have like a good optical zoom, because that would have been really cool. There's an omnidirectional like sensor system. So basically on every side of the drone, you're able to like, it just has like a sensor so you won't crash. That's pretty cool. The battery is 5,000 milliamp hours. And I don't know if these are actually the batteries where you could like plug a phone cable in and like charge with it. That'd be pretty cool. I know the Mavic Air and like Mavic Minis could do that. I'm not sure about these. It charges at 65 watts. And basically people are saying one battery could fully charge in about an hour and a half to 2 hours. Yeah, I mean, I feel this is a great upgrade. It's definitely better than like a lot of other drones on the market, because there really isn't any other good drones on the market for this price. I know Autel is another drone company. They make some drones, but I mean, DJI just has a really good, they're doing a great job with the drones they have. And with that said, let's just go over how much these are going to cost, because trust me, they're not cheap. The Mavic 3 by itself comes with the controller, like kind of just like a holder for the drone, a set of extra propellers, and that's pretty much it. And that's going to start at $21.99. That's up almost $1,000 from the previous Mavic 2. And the Mavic 3 Fly More combo, you are getting a lot more. You're getting some ND filters, two additional batteries, a shoulder bag, and a bunch more extra propeller sets. That's $2,999. And then basically the Mavic 3 Cine basically has all of that same stuff, an extra set of ND filters, that DJI Pro RC controller I was telling you about, and that basically starts at $4,999. So for an extra $2,000, you're getting basically ProRes, that controller, and the 1 TB SSD. So, I mean, yeah, they're pretty cool drones. I think it's a much needed upgrade, but I mean, yeah, these are really expensive still. And if you're looking for a drone that's pretty good, I'd honestly recommend the Mavic Air, Mavic Air 2 or 2S, because those are still really good drones, like that I feel like are kind of underrated. And I mean, they like technically the Mavic Air 2S is actually better than the 3. It shoots 5.4K video, but like, I mean, the Mavic 3 just has so many other cool features and shoots incredibly. So Jonathan, do you want to wrap us up and tell us your final thoughts on the Mavic 3 and 3 Cine?
Sure, Lucas. So yeah, I feel like I already kind of talked about my final thoughts previously. Like, I feel like overall, both the Mavic 3 and the Mavic 3 Cine, there's like barely a difference between the two. The Cine is just slightly better for like shooting video, and it's pretty much it. I feel like overall, both these drones are really cool, but like they're not just like the type of thing for your average consumer. They're like really expensive. It's $2,200 for the Mavic 3 and $3,000 if you get the Fly More bundle. And then for the Mavic 3 Cine, that's coming in at $5,000. So like that's a lot of money for a drone. So like you have to like actually be like about to like use this a lot for it to be worth it. Like you have to be like an actual pro, not just a regular old consumer, because like it's a really good drone if you are a pro, but if you aren't a pro, then you really should not be getting this. Like it's really expensive and you don't really get too much out of it that like is actually useful if you're not like trying to shoot video or like something that you would actually have a reason to get this for. So yeah, Lucas, do you have any final thoughts?
Not really. I just want to say, I mean, they shoot incredible shots. I mean, I can't describe to you how a photo is, but if you want to look up just Mavic 3 like photos, The Verge has a really good article on just them testing out the zoom and like HDR, which is incredible. But I mean, yeah, it's a great drone, and it's definitely, like I said, for prosumers, but it's also getting really close to the DJI Inspire 2. Which, if you don't know, that's kind of like it, like for professional, like that's what they use to like film a lot of movies sometimes. So I feel like it's like and the Inspire 2 cost $5,300. So for an extra $300, you get a drone that's more focused on actually like for cinematographers. So like if you're in that kind of market for a drone, both are really good options, but the Mavic 3 series is pretty great. So next up, we're talking about Microsoft had kind of like an education event, I almost want to say, where they announced Windows 11 SE and the Surface Laptop SE to basically to run Windows 11 SE. And starting with the price, the Surface Laptop SE is $249, and it's going to theoretically compete with a lot of Chromebooks because they're really usually around that same price. It's has an 1366 by 768 pixel TFT display. I'm pretty sure it's touchscreen, not 100% sure. And you basically either get 4 or 8 gigs of RAM with an Intel Celeron N4020 or N4120 processor. Both of these chips are, I mean, they're not great for sure, but for this kind of laptop, they're going to deliver like average performance, especially running Windows 11 SE. So Jonathan, do you want to talk to us more about the ports, connectivity, and just more features of this laptop?
All right. Yeah. So on top of that, like, it doesn't actually have the typical like Windows charger. So what I mean by like the typical Windows charger is like in most Windows laptop, there's this like specific charger that Windows has that's magnetic, and it's honestly pretty good. Like I don't really mind it. It's a little weird, but I'd say it's a pretty good charger. Like I like how it's like magnetic, and it just kind of like, that means that it like stays in, but it's also really easy to take out or put in. So yeah, I mean, like overall, it's pretty good. The charger is definitely interesting how they took it out, because this is kind of aimed to be like the ridiculously budget like Microsoft laptop. Like it's all plastic, it has like barely any ports. And going back to like the charger and everything, it's using like the cheapest type of charger that there is, just a barrel type DC connector. So like this is the type of thing that you'd see if you just bought like a random laptop that runs Windows. Like you'd probably expect something that resembles a barrel type DC connector. So yeah, I mean, like it's definitely like ridiculously budget, and it's just pretty interesting to see Microsoft trying to like go after the Chromebooks, because that means if Microsoft is going after the Chromebooks, who knows, we might see Apple going after Chromebooks even more like sometime soon with like a really cheap maybe iPad. Maybe they might use iPadOS and like that like slow merge with macOS and try and come out of that with some like really budget computers and stuff readily available. So Lucas, do you have anything more to say?
Yeah, I gotta say this is a pretty cool laptop, and it's actually only for like kind of education purposes. I don't really think you could buy it like on your own. It's really aimed towards schools and just like, yeah, education. And like you said about Apple making something, I feel like they wouldn't make something with, I mean, if you ask them if they have a Chromebook competitor, they'd probably say it's the $299 iPad, which I mean, is really fast. It's much faster than a lot of Chromebooks, but also doesn't have the same kind of like OS as Chrome OS at all, or Windows 11 SE by any means. What is Windows 11 SE? Which I feel like is what a lot of people are asking about. So let me just kind of talk about that. And it's basically designed for very low-end devices. It's aimed towards the education market. And it's basically just a very dumbed down version of Windows 11. It looks very much like Chrome OS, that's for sure. But yeah, and you can't download the software actually like on a computer. It's only going to be shipping with like budget like computers, like that ones that would compete with a Chromebook. But yeah, this laptop's pretty cool. I feel like I was expecting it to be priced even a little higher. I feel like $249 for a Microsoft Surface laptop with all this kind of features, I would have expected to be like at least $299, but I feel like it's pretty aggressive pricing given the fact that the most popular Chromebook are really in like this very similar price range. Like the best-selling Chromebook is the Asus Chromebook Spin 713, and that costs $699. But there's also a lot of other ones that people buy really that are like ultra cheap for a laptop that are in the $200 range. So I feel like this is a really good competitor to Chrome OS, and Chrome OS laptop makers should be scared for what this is going to bring. So off that note, Jonathan, do you want to kind of start telling us about what is the metaverse and what is this name change that Facebook has brought? Can you just kind of start us off with?
So yeah, thank you, Lucas. So the metaverse is kind of a really interesting thing, because it's, at least from my understanding of it, it's basically just a play. It's just like a VR type, like just like thing. It's just like Facebook or Meta is calling like everything on VR and AR and basically all of their stuff. Like it's just how Meta is connecting all of their stuff. So it's augmented reality, virtual reality. They have like their smart glasses even that I gotta say are pretty cool. What would be really cool if they had like the type of thing that Snap is working on with like projections and stuff to do AR, and the thing that like North Focals did before they got bought by Google and then like just kind of were shut down almost. But yeah, I feel like it's pretty interesting like what Metaverse is, because it's basically just everything that like Meta owns. Like it's the Oculus stuff, it's the Portal stuff, it's like the actual like Facebook, it's Instagram, it's basically everything. So I feel like that's the most like bare bones like way to put the whole Metaverse thing. So Lucas, do you want to talk more about it?
Sure. So I mean, the Metaverse is, yeah, just like you said, it's pretty much where it's kind of like the future almost. I saw a very great article by Joanna Stern at the Wall Street Journal, and she basically spent 24 hours in the Metaverse, like in an Oculus Quest 2 headset, which I think is just kind of crazy. And it's basically the goal for what the Metaverse is just for everything you do. So like work, play, like hang out, everything is in the Metaverse, which is basically where you could just be with other people in this virtual world, like essentially through a VR headset or like AR glasses. Just a lot. It's really like, it seems almost as if it's going to be like the future. I don't think it's at all going to like take over necessarily. I think it's just going to be like, oh, instead of going to a friend's house to watch a movie, you might be like going to a virtual movie theater in the Metaverse with your friend to watch that movie. Like, I don't think it's going to take over necessarily. Like, I still think that like going into work and going into school, like I still think those are going to be like real things. I don't think that's ever going to be the Metaverse, but I feel like a lot of people are thinking this is like the next big thing for the internet, or this is just kind of like a scam, not a scam necessarily, but just like something that isn't going to really take off. But Facebook is basically rebranding to Meta, and it's basically like a parent company. So like Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, Messenger, those are all still called like their names. They're just a parent company called Meta. Oculus, however, is called Meta now. And so that technically means it's now called like the Meta Quest, Meta Quest 2, etc. And Meta is saying that they're going to have like AR glasses or like just something to view the Metaverse come out next year. I think it's called Project Cambria, but they're basically coming out with a headset that has a long battery life, that's comfortable, and that you're able to, and it's also going to be able to like track your facial gestures, which is kind of cool for the Metaverse. A lot of examples is like Horizon Workrooms, for example. That's something Meta makes, and that's basically where it's like for communicating with like teams for business. It's where you basically have an avatar that looks similarly to you. You could like make it look however you want, and you're basically in a room with a bunch of people like at a meeting or something, and around a desk that you could have like whiteboards, you could like walk around. Overall, like a pretty cool thing. But there's also like, there's already a lot of things like Metaverse kind of things now. Like if you've ever played a video game, like you might have attended a concert before. Like I know Fortnite's done this before, where they have like live artists such as like Marshmello, Travis Scott, Ariana Grande. Those people have performed in Fortnite, like a show, and that is kind of like the Metaverse, where a bunch of people are going to virtual. Like that's essentially what Meta is trying to be, and it's just really cool. Like there's also things like VR chat. Like that's a big kind of just like social like networking site where you could just talk to like random people. You could go to like virtual parties. There's virtual currency, and a lot of what is going to power these are like all these like all like the economic stuff of these is cryptocurrency and NFTs. That's really how it's going to be. Stuff is going to be spent in the Metaverse of it. Like I know a lot of like clothing brands are making NFTs for their clothes. I know Nike, you could buy virtual pairs of Nike shoes, and these are like you could probably use in the Metaverse. Like Meta, I'm pretty sure, is actually working on a cryptocurrency to be used as currency in the Metaverse. So all these things are really cool, but I just feel like it's something that's going to be a huge fail, or it's going to be like the next big step for the internet. So what are your final thoughts on Meta and the metaverse, Jonathan?
You know, honestly, Lucas, I feel like I couldn't agree with you more. Like, when you say like it's either going to be like a huge, like catastrophic, like just fail, and it's just going to be awful and nobody's going to use it, and like Facebook's going to have, or Meta has sunk like a bunch of dollars, like money into this thing, and it's just not good at all, and everybody's like really excited for it, and it just turned out to be awful. Or it's going to be like a huge step, and it's going to like make everybody start to want to be on the metaverse. And it's just going to be all around like this thing that becomes like you said, like the next huge step for the internet. I feel like we should never really try and like strive to have a fully virtual world, because that just, I don't know, I just feel like that would kind of be a little messed up to have like a world that's mainly virtual. But I feel like to have like the internet almost come to life in like this new form, if the metaverse is like not a huge fail and it actually turns out to be like a great success, it is gonna like kind of like, it definitely has the potential to just like completely transform the internet as we know it, and make the internet go from this thing that like you Google like questions you have and you get answers, and like you might play some games or like talk to your friends, into like this whole new like environment where you're meeting new people, you're doing like all sorts of things, you're able to have like an infinite amount of space to do whatever you want. And assuming that like all this stuff could actually happen, it's like really cool to think of like what the future holds if Meta can pull this off. Like, it would just be so cool. But yeah, I mean, Lucas, do you have any like final thoughts or anything?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like what you just said, I completely forgot about how the whole like, how you could like change your environment, like it's like a virtual world. Like, and I was just rereading the Wall Street Journal article I was telling you about like earlier, and it's basically like they use an example how like looking at going to like a library and getting like an encyclopedia is how you would look stuff up. Like, let's say you had a question about like the space or like Mars, you'd go to like an encyclopedia and like a library to do that. Now you just Google it. Like in the metaverse, you could probably just launch an app and be on Mars and like talk to somebody who could like explain it to you. Like, it's all really cool. And like, also if you're working, like you could be working on the beach, or you could be working in like a big office building. Like, it's all really cool. And like you said, you could just build like infinite environments. And one last thing I kind of want to mention, like being in the metaverse is almost having an entire life in real life, but also in the metaverse. Like, you'll basically, like I said, there's currency, like there's going to be jobs in the metaverse that pay real money, or even like just like digital money. There's going to be, and like, especially if, like, just back to the jobs, like especially if you're being paid in like, let's just say like Meta coin or whatever, like that could pop, that Meta coin could possibly translate to real money that you could use in real life. I feel like the possibilities are endless with the metaverse, and it's just really interesting to see what can happen, because like having two lives, basically, it's like you have a house, you have clothes, you have like, you basically could pick how you pick how you want to live your physical real life. But in the metaverse, you also, like, you could design your own house, design your avatar however you want, wear whatever clothes you want, do whatever you want. Like, it's just a big thing that has so much potential that I just think is really cool. So off that note, let's close off today's episode. Thank you for tuning into Streamline Today on Wednesday, November 17th. We hope you have a great week and have enjoyed this episode.
Before we go, make sure to find us on Twitter with @StreamlinePod. We tweet regularly with news and updates about the tech world and podcast information, like when new episodes are coming out and other important updates. If you really like the podcast, please consider leaving us a donation on Patreon, which helps keep making our episodes better and better.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next time.